Hi everyone, welcome back to Uncensored. I'm Marianne from Yachts Mermaids, your host. And today we have a juicy episode. And our guest is a former stewardess, Lucy Wright, who is also now a writer for her website, My Delete, which is a platform where she speaks about women issues and popular culture. Thank you, Lucy, for being here today. It's such a pleasure to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So let's get to the juicy stuff. You recently shared in the yachting community social media groups an article that you wrote. Okay, so the article title is Unpicking the Culture of Misogyny, if that's how it's said, and Abuse Within the Yachting Industry. Uh-huh. You have been part of the yachting industry 6 years now. In the article, you said that your dad was actually a yacht captain, and that kind of obviously opened the doors for you into the industry. Let's start by talking about what was the purpose behind writing this article and sharing it with the community.
So it kind of started for me in June 2020. I left a boat, which wasn't the greatest experience leaving the boat, just kind of on bad terms. And shortly after, I was added to the Facebook group Women for Women Yachting, which I believe you're a part of. Mm-hmm. And I was just reading, you know, all of the stories, and women were posting bad experiences. And I studied film, so filmmaking. And it gave me an idea. I've always wanted to make a documentary, something to do with the industry. And I decided to start doing research for a short documentary and gathered stories, interviewed several female crew members. I did Zoom interviews, and, you know, so many women reached out to me. But inevitably, life got in the way of that particular project. And I kind of put that one on hold. And it's still on hold, still a project. But recently I was sick with COVID. So I kind of had this project developed for 2 years, hearing stories. I picked it up and then I would leave it. And then when I had COVID, a friend of mine sent me an article that had recently been published. And I read it and was just kind of like, okay, that's one kind of way to tell it, but I really want to tell it my way. And then I finished it.
So what was the other article? Like, how was it written? Because I know that you told me prior that you wanted to have a ground level voice in the article. Yeah. And you just shared, obviously, that you wanted to tell it like in a different way. So how was the other article written that made you think, yeah, that's one way, but there's another perspective?
Yeah, I mean, because I started this project and I have so many friends in the industry, people always sending me articles. And I think what I was seeing a lot of was kind of like sensationalist journalism, in that they were talking a lot about, you know, quite intense stories, which there are, but not really offering a solution or really unpicking the reasons why this is so pervasive, and not really kind of unpicking the culture and breaking that down. And that's what I wanted to do. I didn't really want to write something that's just about a shock value, because I know that gets clicks and that gets people to read it. But for me, it was kind of more about, you know, unpicking why it happens and why it doesn't get resolved. And I wanted to go at it from that angle instead. And yeah, like I said, kind of from like a ground level. So this is what I've seen and what I've experienced. And hopefully in that way, it's more relatable.
Yes, absolutely. I definitely understand where you're coming from in the whole sensationalism side of things, which, of course, it is important to, because like you said, it's, you know, it is, it does sell, but it does happen. Like, it is true. And most of the things that are written out there are not even the worst things that actually do happen. So you talked about just now how your article is about, you know, kind of like sharing the culture and why it's not getting resolved and why these things are happening, which are sexual harassment, assault, bullying, work harassment, you know, you name it. All the things, we have actually normalized these things and we have taboo the solutions, you know, which is talking about it, creating awareness, and giving resources, you know, like we just like completely reverse it, you know, and this is what we're actually doing here on Censor. We are reversing that back to where it should be, which is normalizing what has been, you know, taboo, which is talked about this stuff. Because this is, when we talk about things, it may not be the end all solution, but it's definitely creating a, paving a way for that to happen.
Yeah.
And normalizing talking about it is super important, because that way more people feel inspired to do so. So, you know, the fact that you're that was a yacht captain is really intriguing to me. Can you explain to us a little bit about what you learned in your 6 years of yachting that you share in the article, of like what the culture is? Why do you think this is happening? Why is it not getting resolved? And how that correlates to how your dad introduced the industry to you, you know? I just wonder if there's any
crossover. So my dad, he became a captain. He's been working at sea forever, since he was 16. And then he moved to Mallorca in sort of around 2003. And back then, like I say in the article, it wasn't really the industry that we know now. It wasn't necessarily like a very recognized career path in terms of, you know, really big boats where you can make a very kind of solid career and go in rotation, these kind of things. My dad kind of was there in the beginning when it was smaller boats and kind of a smaller industry. And I joined for a season on a charter boat with my dad when I was 18. And, you know, for me, it was like an insane experience because I got to see what my dad does. And it was in Ibiza with charter guests and, you know, partying and just the whole Ibiza scene. But it was a small crew, and actually, you know, there was my dad, and then there was the engineer who's kind of our sort of like family to us. He's similar age to me, and another stewardess. So there was only four of us actually in the beginning, and it was like a family. You know, I didn't know anything about big crews or working with like a big group of girls. I went to uni and then I left and came back and joined another boat. And that was when I was with a big crew of young people. So for me, that's kind of where it began, seeing what I now know of the industry. And I suppose like thinking about the culture on board, you know, it's when I was younger, when I was kind of like in my early 20s, I kind of just kind of got amongst it and enjoyed it and the banter and that kind of thing in the crew mess. I think now that I'm a little bit older and looking from a different perspective, I think it's all of those really small things, those conversations that are had every day, the way that, you know, we talk about different genders on board, the way that we address women or certain crew members are at a lower rank, you know, it's all of these kind of little micro details that build up to a bigger picture. And I also say in the article, you know, I think it's kind of like an invisible thread that comes down from the top down to the bottom. And I think behavior that's not punished, that is just left to kind of go on, is probably one of the reasons why it doesn't become addressed. And it's like you said, it's normalized. It's not, it's just so pervasive, you know, the treatment of women, the way that people talk about women, is kind of just seen as like a bit of a joke and just like banter. But I actually think that that's really important. And I think it really begins with that language for me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that, you know, back in the day, even when I started in 2006, compared to now, you know, I've done 16 years, like I've seen it change, but not really a lot. It's just that it's gotten bigger. That's pretty much it. So I do believe that, you know, that what you're talking about, like that banter, which there's a lot of, especially because there's so many different cultures involved, right? Like what's okay for some are not okay for others. And obviously there's kind of like a common what's okay, what's not okay, but it depends, I guess, on people. And this industry mainly has a lot of young people, which I think they don't have boundaries. And that creates that space for the banter to become normalized. And also the wanting to fit in because there's no confidence from within and wanting to just kind of, you know, not be the odd one out kind of thing. I think that that definitely creates that space for that to happen. And then when we do that, because we're young, you know, like I started when I was 21, you kind of normalize that behavior because you don't know any better because you haven't self-developed. Right. So then it becomes like the norm. It's like, oh, it's just yachting, you know, which you hear all the time. It's like, no, it's not just yachting. Like that's bullshit, you know, but it is what we know because we have normalized it ourselves because we never knew our boundaries. We never really developed. Obviously we grow, shit happens, challenges come. And then we're like, oh shit. Like that's not okay. So back then there's also no social media. Like now there's a massive influx of exposure because of social media, because of the internet. And I think that nothing that happens today, it always been happening, but today it can be more exposed than before. Before it was like very hush hush. You know, owner, captain were super close because it was small vessels. There was no management companies involved. It also feels like the industry has grown, but the laws haven't grown with it.
Yeah.
You know, because I feel like, you know, you may be on you talked about on the article how, you know, if you're over 500 ton, the MLC and all this stuff, but, you know, MLC is really, it was created for shipping. You know, for commercial.
Exactly.
It was never intended for private vessels.
Yeah.
And these vessels obviously got them so big that now they have to apply, you know, abide by it.
Yeah.
But the ones that are not, you know, that are under 500 ton, they, like you said, it just slips through the net.
Yeah.
But the problem is that it's still a business because you have employees. And you are calling it a business for tax purposes and all this stuff. So it's kind of like they haven't catch up with what's actually happening. And because of that, we are the crew. We are, we're reaping not the benefits, but the challenges of that.
Yeah. And I think, you're right. You know, the MLC stuff with the smaller boats, it's definitely, it does tend to feel a little bit more, you know, they always say it's like a family sort of vibe on board, which you know, that's, what does that really mean? You know, we still need a contract, we still need to be treated as employees. We're employed, we're not kind of there to just like live our normal lives. You know, it's a workplace, and I think that's really important, is that oftentimes with yachting, that line is blurred. It's always, you know, it's where people live as well on board these boats, and they live there and their downtime is there, but they also work there. So I think it's kind of interesting that, you know, a lot of your personal life is on these boats too, but there just still need to be a level of professionality. And I think that lacks a lot of the time. And so many people do want to kind of have this industry be more credible. I mean, I went back to England recently and was with a group of friends, and everybody talks about Below Deck. You know, my friends that have no idea about the industry say, oh, is it really like it is on Below Deck? And that's also kind of a reason. I mean, I only mentioned Below Deck once in the article, but I really wanted to write it also from a really accessible point of view, where people who have no idea about the industry can read it and be like, oh, that means this. And you know, it's understandable from that point of view, because I think you're right, it's just been pushed under the carpet for so long, but it does have a lot of catching up to do. And just in terms of, you know, in our contracts, there's never really anything to do specifically with sexual assault. There might be one line, but usually that is under code of misconduct, which is reasons why the seafarer can be let go from the boat. There's not really anything, there's no specific thing about that, and there should be, because it happens. Like we're seeing, it's so pervasive. I mean, why isn't there anything a little bit more specific to do with that?
Well, I think it's because it's not a requirement. That is the truth.
And I think there's no reason why something like that can't be put into place. I mean, that's why I also mention the film industry. The British film industry have now formed a legislation specifically around that. You know, because of Me Too, obviously, the film industry was most affected by that, because it was directly to do with the entertainment industry.
But, you know, this is the difference between that happening and where we're at, that's not happening. And it's because we haven't, you know, for that to happen, for that legislation to go into place and all that, people were screaming out of the top of their lungs, mm-hmm. basically. People are like, yeah, this is not okay. Like, we need to change this. Like, this needs to change now. We haven't yet done that in the industry. We're still, you know, we're now talking about it, like we're having a conversation about it, like it's normal, you know, like this is just recently in the past 2 years that this is like being going on.
Exactly.
But like I tell people, like my voice is one. We need thousands of women, and not only in the yachting industry, but in the maritime industry. We really need to unite in the maritime industry, because we're seafarers. And I think one of the things that the yachting industry, what I've seen in my career, is that yachties don't recognize the fact that they are seafarers. They're like, I'm a yachtie. I'm like, well, that's being a seafarer. You know what I mean?
Also, and there's not that much professionality embedded into it in a lot of ways. Yeah. I mean, I think my male friends that are on yachts, I think they do take it with a more professional kind of stand, because they do their courses and they do learn all the MLC stuff, and it's all very by the book. But I think in the interior side of things, there's not that much.
And that's what has to also change. But like you said in your article, which it was interesting, how, you know, stewardess are like domestic, right? Mm. Like the role of the housewife. Basically, that's what we play, right? Like we're hosting your parties, we're making sure everybody's fed, everybody has a good drink, and we are playing that role, you know. Yeah. But then at the same time, in a way, we're not, because being a head of department of the interior, there's so much more involved.
Yeah,
you know, and I think that it does need to get regulated. And I think that's when the energy shifts into like, this is a career.
Yeah.
You know, you're not playing just housewife, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I do, you know, I do know there are people that I have friends in the industry that they're super professional. They're amazing at what they do. It's just, unfortunately, in some cases, it's not given as much credibility as the kind of deck side of things. You know, like you said, it kind of like emulates like a 1950s household. Like the guys go out to work and the women stay inside and like make a sandwich in the kitchen. Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, you're there and I do this and you do that. It's,
and then you have the few little ones that are like trying to get on the deck on the engineer side, you know. But I think you, like you said, there's no credibility because, and I have captains told me this. It's like, well, you guys don't need to, you know, what do you guys do? You don't go to school. You don't invest in yourself, which is not true. I invested in myself. That's why I became a successful, you know, head of department. Yeah. But I invested in myself because I wanted to do that, not because it was required, you know?
It's so not, and it's,
I can see where they're coming from as well, you know, but also that's how they have created this, right?
Yeah, and that's another point is what I talk about, again, talking about solution, you know, it's not, it's all fair to tell these stories and kind of provide the shock factor, but then what's the solution? And I think a lot of the solution lies in giving people, captains, management companies and owners an incentive to make it more of a respectable environment for women on board. You know, there has to be an incentive because, like you said, it's a business, especially charter boats. You know, that the season is their time, they make their money in the season. So for to have a complaint in the middle of the season, it's going to stop the business, it's going to interrupt things. So there needs to be more of an incentive to make these things be put into place.
Yeah, and that's where kind of everybody in the industry has to come together and be transparent about their policies and what they stand for. Because when we are trying to get other people involved, then they have to be held accountable in their own business, right? First. Mm-hmm. So that opens up a kind of warm of like, oh, okay, well, now I'm going to have to look at, am I, you know, do I have equal rights in my business? Do I have diversity? Is it inclusive? You know, it kind of like puts the responsibility on them as well, so they can actually participate at a bigger scheme. And I think, for example, something like insurance. You can hold accountable people through insurance. Yeah. Insurance equals money.
Yeah, of course.
Like if you don't have XYZ, you get penalized. You have to pay more.
Yeah. And, you know, with owners, I mean, I'm sure you're aware of the stories where there's been a stewardess who's been assaulted on a boat and the owner ends up paying out. So, you know, they have an incentive. The owners don't want these things happening on their boats. It's not, doesn't do them any good. So we need to make it more of an incentive. You know, there needs to be things in place that prevent it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I do agree with you. And I think, you know, it all starts with education. And ideally, there will be some sort of education implemented into something like a STCW that everybody has to take already and that you have to repeat every 5 years, however long that is. But there's so many ways that this can be resolved, you know, or at least obviously it's not that it's going to be gone forever because that's not true, but it can definitely be minimized because the problem is that right now nobody's being held accountable for their actions.
And
so
it keeps
happening.
Yeah. And girls are scared. I mean, there isn't one girl that I spoke to when I was gathering these stories that was fine with having their name on their story. Not one girl. They were all wanted to be anonymous. They all wanted to, you know, remain in the industry, or they didn't want to offend somebody, or they were scared of how it made them look or affected their future job, you know, propositions. They don't want to tell their stories. So to go to take that step and to report it is huge. But when you then also have the worry that you might not be taken seriously and it might not even get listened to. It's a huge deal. And I think
yeah,
that needs to be taken away too. There needs to be a safer space for women to come forward and men too. I have heard about men, but this for me was more about the women that
I mean, because it is the majority, you know.
Yeah.
Or at least that we know of, you know.
Yeah.
There is a lot of different gaps, and I am actually working behind the scene with other people collaborating to create a bridge between that gap that you're talking about, how creating something that will allow people to actually have a place to put their evidence down without re-traumatizing themselves, getting resources to heal, law resources that are free. So I do have to say that on the behind the scenes, things are happening.
Yeah.
It's just that we just need to be patient. But I am very much involved in this because doing this show has actually made me an advocate for this. So I'm like, okay, we can talk about it. Great. But I'm all about action. How can we create something? And I went out there and I did my There are solutions out there. So I decided to reach out to some of them, and they're more than happy to be on board, and it's looking good. And it's not just like the yachting industry. It's like the maritime industry and governments. And there's a lot of things that are happening, but it takes time. And it does take people to also come forward and be that, because without it, it's almost like, what do you call it? There's no force, there's no strength, you know, there's no fuel. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, oh, he said, she said, versus like, no, here's the data, here's the facts. This is what's happening, you know, and that's what we're creating. We're creating a platform where we can actually get data so we can show that data to government and be like, here, this needs to change, you know?
Yeah.
But it does take time because the same way that this didn't happen in, you know, one day, the solution also will take time. So going back to your article, and also I do want to share that just recently in America, there was a bill that was introduced into Congress that is going to make key reforms to help prevent sexual assault and sexual harassment from taking place at sea. So basically it's going to strengthen transparency of company policies, protecting survivors who report, and requiring mandatory reporting. So there are things happening, you know, but it, like I said, it takes time, you know? So going back to your article, you talk about a specific story about a girl named Abby, which I'm assuming it's obviously anonymous. Can you share her story with us?
So this girl, obviously the name has changed. I knew that she had a story, and I reached out to her, and she was kind of in a place where she had dealt with everything in terms of like the, not paperwork, but the kind of more official side of things. She'd already came out at the end of that. So she was kind of ready to talk about it, but it was still extremely difficult for her to talk about it. And obviously she wants to remain anonymous. And she was on a boat. She'd been in the industry for a while since she was 19. She was 25 when this particular thing happened to her. And she was on a boat that was traveling around the world. It was charter. She was really excited by it. And she told me from the beginning, the captain was inappropriate with her and tried to kiss her at a crew party. And she kind of like shrugged it off and just, you know, kind of just got on with her life after that. But he persisted in being flirtatious and kind of being inappropriate towards her. And it just builded and builded and builded. And then eventually he raped her on the boat. The captain was involved with the chief stew of the boat, and she had actually confided in another crew member, who ended up telling the chief stew what Abby had told her, and then the chief stew attacked her. So, you know, horrendous. And she did report it to management, but they told her that unless she wanted to take it beyond management and to court, they wouldn't be able to help her. Until a new management company came in and took it more seriously, and eventually the captain did get fired, but Abby had already left the boat. So yeah, an incredibly painful process for her. And I'm really grateful that she told me the story and let me put it in my article, because I think it's really, really important that people know that that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Things that I take from this story that you just shared is how important it is to have boundaries and to listen to yourself and get out when you know there's something not right. Mm-hmm. And that only comes when you know what you're okay with and what you're not okay with, and you can be confident in just like walking away from the scenario. Also, you know, you talked about management, right? And then another management company saying, okay, we're more serious about this. We're going to get the person get off the boat, which he did. But I believe in the story says that the captain is still working in the industry.
He is.
So yeah. Basically, the predator is out there. And the data says that at least one predator will have 6 victims.
Yeah, he's still working. So, he's on another boat, yeah. Which obviously was really hard.
This will continue. Yeah. So yes, management took him out of that vessel, but why is this person still getting a job?
Yeah.
You know? And then this comes back to, you know, you said that a lot of the girls, most of the girls, and this is something I always hear, is like, oh, I'm afraid that I'm not going to get another job. I'm afraid I'm going to lose my reputation.
And that's also something that I say in the article is, you know, there's 3 reasons why sexual assault happens a lot. In industries, it's a male-dominated environment, bad behavior going unpunished, and a strong level of hierarchy, which yachting is all of those things.
Yes.
But I think just going back to having responsibility to protect yourself, I think you're right, but I also think that when girls... anybody, but specifically women, are joining yachts, I think it's sold to us as such an amazing opportunity, and it's so, you know, it pulls you in so much. And I think when you're young, you do kind of get blinded by the lights a little bit in that respect. Mm-hmm. And I think you kind of see, oh, everybody else is kind of cool with a captain. I think he's a bit weird, but nobody else seems to have a problem with this behavior. Everyone else kind of accepts it. No one really says anything. And I think that Abby told me that the other crew members, they saw it, and they saw him kind of, you know, smack her bottom or whatever in the crew mess. And they didn't really mention it, or they didn't say anything, and they didn't call it out or pull her aside and say, hey, are you cool with this? So I think she kind of just thought that was how it was.
Yeah, absolutely. Like that's the story. Mm-hmm. But the story also needs to change. And yeah, the truth is, like, if you are listening to this and you are wanting to become a yachty, if you don't have strong boundaries, do not enter yachting. Do not enter yachting. Period. We need to change the story, you know?
And I think also, you know, there needs to be, I only just now, as I'm a bit older, I say no all the time. If it doesn't feel right to me, I walk away. But I think also, you know, Of course, money is a huge draw. You know, and those are chatter tips. He's, you know, the captain's a bit weird. He makes inappropriate jokes, but we've got a charter next week and I'm going to earn like 10K in tips. You know, that's obviously a huge thing. But you're right. You know, you need to walk away as soon as it becomes an uncomfortable situation. But I think Abby does say in one quote, you know, they house me, they they give me my financial sort of support. It's everything. So walking away, I think, can be a bit more complicated in so many situations, because especially if you're at the other side of the world, you're not with your family, you know, you don't have that support system. It's difficult. I just think, obviously, there's people that take major advantage of that. They know that somebody's away from home, and who's going to listen to them anyway, you know? I think it really has to, we need to be supported before we can report a lot of the time or walk away. You know, management companies and captains, they work together, you know, that's the relationship. And I think a lot of the time management companies, that's where their loyalty is. It's very true, you know, they protect that relationship. So I think not having much clout as like a stewardess, you're kind of sort of at the bottom of a pile. I also had a similar, an experience with a management company. During COVID, I got let go from a boat. I got put on unpaid leave and I read through my contract. Admittedly, for the first time, really fully, I read that contract. And I just really want to say, read your contract, understand it, read it, write it down. If you don't understand it, take it to somebody else. And I sat with, I spoke to my mum, my dad, you know, I was kind of like, guys, this means this, right? And I knew that the boat was kind of pulling the wool over my eyes a little bit about a couple of things. So I rang the management company and I asked them to clarify exactly what the situation was that I was in on unpaid leave. And they wouldn't speak to me about it. They said, no, we can't speak to you about that. It's like, but you, surely you wrote the contract. Like, what? It was so, you know, and then what's the contract for if they're not even going to honor what's in the contract? That was on a kind of a smaller boat, but you know, you really need to read your contract, because your contract is your safety net 100%.
And like you said, not just read it, understand it.
Understand.
And this is where self-responsibility comes back. You have to 100%. You have to educate yourself. You have to know your seafarer rights. You have to know, you know, your flag state. What does that mean? What are the laws in depending on what country you're going to be in? You know, your own seafarer rights laws for your own passport, you know, your citizenship, because all this comes into place. It's not just one thing. Everything comes together. And yeah, it may take a little bit of time, but you can do the research, you know.
It's worth it. And I think if you're going to make this to your career, you definitely need to have something in place before something bad happens, before there's a grievance, before you have a complaint. You know, sign up with Nautilus, read your contract, know where your support is, because ultimately you won't necessarily go to those places until you've got a problem, in which case it might be too late or you might kind of be too traumatized or whatever. But just make sure you know where the support is, because you don't usually get told those things when you join a boat. You know, it's always so quick and it's like, you join in 2 days, 3 days, and you know.
But this is why I always tell girls, like, you need to ask the question. Example, like, when I go on a boat, I ask the captain, like, what are the policies? What happens if I'm assaulted? What happens if I'm harassed? What happens if I die? They should be able to reply to you. And if they can't, then, and they can be like, hey, you know what? I haven't gone through that. Let me check and I'll come back to you. Awesome. And if they start getting all weird to you, do not get on the boat. Do not get on the boat. Because somebody that is going to be there to support you will not have an issue to tell you what the policies are. It's very black and white.
Yeah.
You know? So you have to ask the questions as well. It's not just like, oh, what's the itinerary? And how much am I getting paid?
Yeah.
There's so much more that you need to know before 100%. You go into the boat.
You need to, like, you know, what you're saying there essentially is suss out how seriously the captain takes it. If you're going to make a complaint or if something happens to you, how much does he care about that? How much do they care about that? The people that are above you. And I think that's really good advice. And I think, you know, you obviously being in the industry for so long and I've kind of grown up with it, I feel like I do, I do have my own back a little bit more, but I do worry, and I'm quite protective of younger girls in the industry because I really want them to stand up for themselves. But I think it kind of can swallow you a little bit in the beginning because you don't know your worth and you're not really given any worth. You're kind of just like, you know, the bottom of the pile, really. As a junior stewardess, it's kind of like sink or swim. You get amongst it.
Yeah, but this is more of like your worth as a human, not as a stewardess. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if you know your worth, if you have confidence, if you know as a human, you know, that you are worthy of not being assaulted, that you're worthy of not being harassed, that you're worthy of not, you know, it's a complete different game changer, you know? So
of course,
if you are new to the industry or you're even senior crew members, they're still going through all this. And it's because they haven't self-developed. And this is where you investing in yourself, in support, you know, is the key. Because we don't have that support right now implemented within the industry. So you have to look for the support yourself. It's like you gotta also think about what would happen if something goes wrong. Right? How can I prevent that? You prevent that by educating yourself. You prevent that by having resources. You prevent that by having, you know, self-worth, you know, and that's self-development. And sometimes you do need somebody to help you get there, you know, whether that be a therapist or a coach or whoever, you know, like invest in yourself because this is what's going to make you better as a human and have a safer environment at sea, you know, and beyond, really. Because yes, ideally we would have all these amazing resources and courses and everything will be regulated, but that's not where we're at. So what can we do today to prevent that? And, you know, because obviously we want to prevent, we don't want to like, have to go through something horrible, which I have gone through, you have gone through, other people have, and we're telling you guys, this is the solution. You know, like we already been where you're at, like, don't follow our footsteps. Like, do what we did after, which was actually invest in ourselves and educate ourselves and set boundaries, you know?
And don't be intimidated, you know? Don't be intimidated by sort of the people that are higher up than you that may tell you things that just aren't true, you know? Just kind of believe that what's going on is not right if it's a situation, and just kind of, stand up for yourself and so don't be blinded by the lights. I think that happens a lot. And there's lots of kind of, a lot of it has been social and partying and drinking, kind of keep your wits about you. And I think people do get kind of carried away and swallowed in all of that. Not that that's an excuse, it shouldn't happen regardless of that, but it does get kind of a little bit messy sometimes in the social side of things.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another thing, having that balance, because at the end of the day, you don't know these people. You don't.
It's like a forced kind of very quickly intimate relationship with people that that you don't know. You know, you're kind of put with these people that you would never necessarily choose to be with.
Yeah.
So you need to kind of remember that you don't really know them as well as you might think sometimes.
Yeah. And, you know, in Below Deck, the one of the girls said, you know, that she was assaulted and she was, I believe she was drunk when it happened. And she said it very clearly, you know, me being drunk is not a green pass to rape me. You know what I mean? So it's not that you should be able to go get wasted and be and feel and know that you're gonna come back home safe. Of course, why wouldn't you?
100%.
Guys don't have that issue, right? Guys get drunk and they don't think, oh, maybe tonight I'm gonna get raped. You know what I mean? Like that's not the reality. But because we do live in an environment that is more potentially unsafe than safe, because you don't really know, you're in a country, most of the time, you're in a country that you don't speak the language. You're with people that you don't know. So you do have to, I'm not saying don't drink, don't do that stuff, but I'm just saying be more mindful of who are you surrounding yourself with. If you're going to get wasted, be like, hey guys, who's going to be the person who's going to hopefully take care of you, you know? So, you know, it's, we do have to kind of be responsible for ourselves a little bit, because if not, we do end up putting ourselves in positions that could lead us to things that are not, you know, ideal. Yet, not saying that that was your, because you got drunk, now it's your fault, because it's not true.
No, no.
So like you could be completely shit-faced, not even be able to open your eyes, and it's not okay to get raped.
Nobody,
that's not a
green
path.
Absolutely not. But,
because I think I hear it a lot where people think, oh, well, I was wasted. Maybe it was my fault.
Yeah.
No.
And it happens. Fault. It happens so quickly in the industry as well. I think people join and it kind of just everything happens at 100 miles per hour. You know, before you know it, you're at a crew party and everybody's wasted, and then you're being offered something and everyone's doing it, so you kind of want to fit in, you want to get on with everybody, you want everyone to like you, because it is such a clique, it's such a sort of can be like a pack environment, and I think people obviously they want to be liked, so you might end up doing things that you don't necessarily do. And I see that all the time with younger crew, you know, they kind of just, they go with the flow and things happen that they might not necessarily want to happen. But it's very much encouraged, you know, that's the culture. And
of course,
everyone's drinking, and that's what yachting is. It's very social. And you've got to be kind of like, you're going out on big crew dinners and partying one night.
Like work hard, party harder.
Yeah. It's always been that way. It's always, you're always encouraged.
But it doesn't have to be that way. That's the thing.
You don't have to do that. No.
You know?
You don't have to.
It comes down to when you are really strong in within yourself, then those things are kind of like, you really see them for what they are, you know?
Yeah.
And I honestly think that no 19-year-old should be in yachting. I think that's way too young. Like yachting, you should be at least 25 to get into yachting. Like 18, 19, 20, you're still way too young. You haven't figured out shit, you know?
Yeah.
And that just puts you in a very vulnerable place. You know it. I know it, you know? Thank you for sharing your voice through your article. And for saying yes to talking about it and creating awareness and normalizing these topics. You know, I want to finish with, you said that there should be a new infrastructure, right? That creates a safer environment. We have talked about a lot of things that could potentially help that. But what, in your opinion, like in your dream, right? What would that look like?
I think just, you know, more people need to listen, first of all. I think it needs to be something that people are not scared of when it comes to them, whether that's your head of department or the designated person ashore, or, you know, the management, the people within that team. I think they need the support, and they need something more structured, a kind of system of support that they can refer to, not to kind of shy away from it anymore. It's there. We know it happens. We know it's real. So let's address it now. I think that's really important. And I think there needs to be an incentive, you know, it's like Jenny Matthews of She of the Sea. She said it best when she said, it kind of, there needs to be a business model for it, you know, a reason why captains and owners and management companies would get on board with things like this, because at the moment kind of just disrupts the business model. And I think that's why things, complaints and grievances don't get taken as seriously as they could do. So I think that would be that needs to happen, you know, there needs to be an incentive. And I think also there just needs to be more awareness of the kind of culture that we're creating on boats. If you are somebody who has authority, or you're a head of department, or you know, you're kind of just respected on board, which we all should be. Obviously, we know it relies on hierarchy. I think we just need to be more aware of the culture that we're creating, what language we're using when we talk to each other, how we speak to different genders, different, you know, groups of people. We need to have more awareness of that, and just also realize that whilst it's work and play, it's also supposed to be a professional environment, and it just needs to, everyone deserves to be respected. I'd really love that everybody is respected, regardless of whether you're cleaning a toilet or you're driving the boat. You know, that would be a nice environment to work in.
Awesome. And is there any way that you like to be supported in your journey, that maybe people can support you in some way?
Just read the article, share it. Let's start a conversation about it. You know, I want to just start a conversation about it. I want to know what people think and just share it everywhere. That's what I would like.
Yeah. So below the video, you can read the article, and you can also share the link for everybody else to read it and reshare. And Lucy, yeah, thank you for what you've been doing. Thank you for sharing your voice. And yes, thank you for saying yes to Uncensored.
Thank you so much.
Getting real and raw.
Thanks for listening to me.
Okay, guys, that's a wrap. I'll see you next time.